The following is a true story, except for the ending, which just hasn't happened yet. This is Escape from Provo Canyon.
It's past midnight, the early hours of 1984. The plane lands in a snow-covered field next to another black rental car. The plane door opens and a blast of cold air hits my face. Snowflakes swirl inside the cabin. And with that same, like, military precision, I'm loaded off the plane and into the back seat. Goons squeeze in on either side of me and off we go. 15 minutes later, we pull up to what looks like a compound. A goon moves a big gate to the side, and the car enters. And as we roll down this long driveway, we pass this big U-shaped object, which is covered in snow. We pull up to a circular drive, to what looks like a no-name, like, single-story building. There's no windows, just a door. I'm taken out of the car, my arms pinned at my side. A gang of goons emerges, each with a walkie-talkie crackling on their belts. One of the goons unlocks a door with a key from a leash that, like, snaps back to his hip. And I'm pushed inside. And behind me, I hear the door lock. A goon flips the switch, fluorescent lights pop, like, illuminating what I can only describe as, like, the fucking creepiest insane asylum hallway. I'm frog-marched down the hallway, which leads to another door, and then to another hallway, and another door, and another hallway. And as I'm submerging deeper and deeper inside of this compound, or whatever the fuck this thing is, like, psychologically, like, I'm holding my breath. Because I've got, like, this sinking feeling, like, I'm not surfacing anytime soon. I'm taken into a large shower room and told to strip naked. Off to the side, there's a goon stuffing his hand into a pair of rubber gloves. One of the goons bends me over and pries my cheeks apart and shines a fucking flashlight up my ass. I'm pushed inside a windowless room that's about the size of maybe two tennis courts, and I can make out there's what looks like a dozen or so bunk beds, and there's people sleeping in them. One of the goons, he pulls me over to an empty bunk, and it's clear. You know, it's like, hey, this is where you're going to be sleeping tonight. And I have, like, a million questions racing through my head, but at this point, I'm just so traumatized. I just lay down, and, like, I have no idea how I got to sleep that night. But I did. Bam! A door slams, someone shouting,
Let's go!
Rise and shine! Fluorescent lights buzz and pop. A pair of legs, like, dangles in front of me. Some kid, you know, drops down to the floor from the bunk above and starts making his bed. And I look around the room and I see all these guys about the same age as me, like, waking up and mulling around. One of the goons, the guy who at my dad's house was, like, Jeffrey, like, that guy, he takes me into this adjacent room, which looks more like a war room than an office. Covering an entire wall is a map of what looks like Utah. And it's been all marked up with these strange, like, military-type symbols. And on a credenza, there's, like, a tight stack of Soldier of Fortune magazines. And like, a photograph of, like, a slimmer, younger version of this goon in army fatigues. The goon sits down and adjusts this big writing pad so it's at the perfect right angle to the edge of the desk. And he takes his time doing this, like, deliberately, like, while I'm standing there. But before I can say anything, like, he leans back and stares at me. And then, like, shifts his gaze, like, staring past me. And he starts barking as if, like, debriefing from some mission.
Jeffrey, you're at Provo Canyon School. Your father took custody of you from your mother, and he's placed you here under my supervision, where you remain until you're 18 years old.
It was nice to have an explanation. It was nice to know, like, this wasn't a kidnapping. It was nice to know, like, I wasn't in juvenile hall or, like, going to prison. But, you know, later I found out this place, you know, was super shitty in its own unique way. So yeah, the goon, he gives me like a second to sort of process everything, which was, you know, like just completely impossible. And then he asked me, he's like, do you have anything to say for yourself? And I just remember like looking at the guy, and I'll never ever forget this. This is what I said. This is exactly what I said. I'm having a hard time taking all this in. And I just broke down and started crying. So there I am just sobbing. And this goon, he's like looking me up and down, you know, just full of arrogance and disdain. He hails another dude and signals like, you know, hey, take this sorry piece of shit out of here. And as I'm getting pulled out of the office, the goon grabs my arm and he's like, oh, by the way, from now on, you're number 196. And in that moment, he became my warden. So now I'm getting marched out of the office, and at the doorway, I like freeze. And I look, and all the kids, like they're staring at me. And inside of me, there's like this schism, like a fucking like mitosis of the soul. You know, where once there was a single Zhao, now there are two. You know, an old Zhao, the cool drummer, the member of the Saratoga tribe. You know, the Zhao I loved and was loved by his friends. Like that Zhao, I just buried like deep inside of me. And as I stepped into the room, I stepped into the other Zhao, like a new Zhao, a bad Zhao. A Zhao I neither knew nor loved and was unloved by his friends because at this place he had none. This new Zhao, he's nobody's drummer. He's no longer a piece of teenage wildlife. He's just a fucking wretch. Back on my bunk, someone has placed for me like a toiletry bag. Inside, it's got like, you know, toothbrush and toothpaste. Menon speed stick.
By Menon.
Such a gross smell. I mean, to this day, it just makes me want to fucking puke. So I'm sitting there. You know, I get a sort of second wind. I mean, you know, like, hang on, this is all so fucked up. You know, I got to do something. So I go up to the goon and I'm going to ask him like, hey, where's the phone? I need to call. I want to call my mom. But like before I can ask, he bellows out. He's like, line up the showers. And I look around and everyone starts like stripping down naked. And I look up at the goon and he just yells at me. He's like, you heard me, strip down, line up. So now I'm in a line against a wall with like 20 other guys, and we're each holding, you know, identical shower bags, and we're all naked. Now, I don't know about like the rest of you, but when you're 16, you know, you can be, you know, a little self-conscious about your body. Let's just say, you know, it's something that you're kind of, you know, still coming to terms with. So yeah, this was just really fucking awkward, especially given everything that just fucking happened. And now being next to all these guys who I don't know. And yet here we all are, you know, each in our different shapes and sizes, yet, you know, we're all sharing one thing, you know, besides the men in speed stick. You know, each one of us is like miserable in his own unique way. All of a sudden the goon like bellows out, you know, call off! And from the front of the line, I hear the guys, you know, one by one, they're shouting out these numbers.
67, 102, 134.
And it kind of goes down the line. 156. And when it's my turn, I just like instinctively know.
195.
And I say it. 196. So all accounted for, I suppose. The goon unlocks the door and we're marched down back into that big shower room where I was strip searched. All around me, guys are, you know, soaping up their balls and their dicks and their underarms. And yeah, it's still fucking weird. You know, the warm water hits my head. It's nice to feel like a sort of, you know, physical reprieve from having, you know, traveled all night and having been so stressed out. I just remember just closing my eyes and, you know, finding a little moment of solace until I hear it. It's like this slapping sound. And I open my eyes and I see there's this guy. He's kind of short, but he's pretty well built. He's got a face and a haircut like John Gruden, like the old coach for the Raiders. But he's got this just fucking enormous schlong. And he's wagging it at me, like whipping his hips back and forth so that it's like slapping the inside of his thighs, like he was that big. And he's like jeering at me. It's not like gay or anything like that. It was more like an initiation. Like, I'm the new kid? Like, I don't know. I mean, it was fucking weird. And I just remember averting my eyes, like, going like, what the fuck is going on here? So after showers, we're all marched off into this little dining area that looks like a cafeteria for fucking grammar school kids. Everything, like the trays, the chairs, the forks, the cups, like everything is this bright, cheerful, like primary colors. And they have two of those juice machines, the one where the juice whirls around inside of a clear plastic top so you can see the flavors, which are really more like colors. Like, it ain't cherry or grape, it's like it's red or purple. And all of this juxtaposed against us, like hardened, captured teenagers. Like, the entire vibe is just completely cynical. So after breakfast, I go back up to the goon. I'm like, hey, listen, like, I really need to call my mom. He just cuts me off. And he's like, 196, there is no phone. And I'm like, what am I supposed to do? And he's all, lunch is at 12, dinner's at 5. And I'm all, but what am I supposed to do in the meantime? And he grabs me and he pushes me down on this big L-shaped couch. And so I just sit there and I do absolutely nothing. I just have these waves of realization that I'm fucking stuck inside of this dungeon of a room. But this can't be. Something's gonna happen. Like my mom's gonna call and I'm gonna get out of here, and then that doesn't happen. And then the wave comes back and you're like, I just can't believe this. Like, I've really been taken into this room and I can't leave. Like what is this place? Like, unbelievably, there's no way this exists, but yet I am here. This does exist. I wake up the next morning and my heart just sinks like deep inside of my chest. Like, back on the couch, like, I'm struggling. Like, struggling to accept my plight. Like, I ask again for the phone, plead my case, and it all goes nowhere. And the rest of the day, I just languish on the couch. And I don't talk to anyone. Like, I got nothing to say. Rather, I'm just, like, panged with these sick questions. Like, Utah, what the fuck? Have I really fucked up this bad? Okay, draining the pool. I did drown the neighbor's rose garden. Stealing wood for the ramp? Yeah, technically that's barring without asking. Okay, I might have sniffed some cocaine a few times, but so did everyone else. I wasn't doing anything anyone else wasn't. But still, this dungeon, is this the price I must pay? Like, these crimes of mine? Like, I'm no criminal, I'm no fucking crook. Okay, I might have ridden roughshod over a few social mores, but hey, like, these are torts at best. So sue me, like, but don't incarcerate me. And I fantasize about clemency, like, I'll happily wear, like, the world's fucking tallest dunce cap, but just let me out of here, like, please. I mean, I'm 16 years old, like, my hair's on fire. I want to go out, like, I want to rage with my friends, like, I need to rage with my friends, you know, like, fucking howl at the moon. But yeah, all I can muster is, like, just a fucking whimper at these fluorescent lights. But hang on, it's like, this is all, like, way too gnarly, like, this can't be real. Like, dude, you're just in the world's, like, gnarliest time out. You know, mom will come, somebody will come. But then, like, another hour passes, and I just get, like, lost in my thoughts again. But it always lands me, like, right back here, just on this fucking couch. Thank you. So after dinner at like Provo's like Cafe Cynic, that goon takes me back to his office. And like as he removes a walkie-talkie from this like thigh holster, he introduces me to my therapist, Tim Tubbs. Just like imagine if Charlie Brown had grown up to be like a total burnout, uninspired therapist. Like, that was Tim Tubbs. Nice guy, but just sort of, you know, low energy, uninspired, like, you know, just a puncher of time clocks. And let's just say for fun that it did actually talk like the teachers in like the Peanut strip. So Tubbs takes me down like a series of those like Creepshow hallways. And this is the first time I've been out of like that room and that little dining area in like 16 days. You know, and I'm like anticipating, you know, a change of scenery, but you know, there's never any windows. Just more locked doors. This place is such a fucking rat hole. So he takes me into like this little cubbyhole of an office and he just starts in, you know, sort of like the Palo Alto therapist, you know, hey, Jeffrey, how's it hanging? And me, it's like once bitten, fuck you twice, you know, and I just cut him off. I'm like, what the fuck have you people done? And like, I'm fucking going home. I reach for the phone on his desk, but before I can grab it, you know, he pulls it away and I'm like, give me that. And he's like, you know, hey, buddy, calm. And I'm like, I am fucking calm. Now give me the fucking phone. I'm calling my mom. And he just shrugs and he gives it to me. And I pull the receiver up to my ear and like, there's no dial tone. The look on his face just says it all. I just toss the receiver back on his desk. You know, I'm just fuming. I'm just glaring at him. And then I think again, I'm like this dude's offering to put me on the phone with my dad. Like, my dad could be on the other end of this receiver, like right here and right now. Like, after all, he's the one who orchestrated all this shit. Like, this is a Dr. Dad operation, fucking top to bottom. But then again, I'm so fucking pissed. Like, I don't even want to talk to him. And then I'm like, you know, hey, Joey, like, maybe you should just talk to him, like, apologize or something, like, whatever's fucking clever. Like, once you get back home, you can just forget about all this shit. So I take the receiver and Tubbs dials, and it's like, ring, ring, and, like, all of a sudden there's Dad, like, on the line. And in, like, this cheery voice, he's like, happy birthday, Jouster. Like, as if nothing has happened. And I realized I've just spent like, I don't even know how many days in this fucking dungeon of a room. Like, and it turns out today is my birthday. Like, I've just turned 17. And so instead of like, you know, like a measured genuflective, like, I don't even know if that's a word, like, but like, instead of like a kiss to the ass, like, I just can't help with, like, all the feet, just the rank indignation. It all just pours out of me. I'm like, I can't believe you had me fucking kiss. That flashlight shut up my fucking ass. Like, I need to go home now. And my dad just cuts me off and he's like,
Jeff, you're staying at Provo Canyon. I took custody over you from your mom and I placed you there under their supervision where you'll remain until you're 18 years old.
You know, my dad, he'd just like slam the gavel right upside my head. You know, verdict final, no appeal, no parole. And I just sat there and sank like so deep inside of myself. And to my dad, I didn't say anything. I just handed the phone back to Tubbs. And I accepted my fate.
Next time on Escape from Provo Canyon.
The goon grabs my arm and he's like, let's go. And I'm like, what? Like, where are we going? I'm lost. I have no idea what he's saying. And then one of the guys looks over at me and he's just all, yeah, you just popped your cherry, dude.